All right, it is 9:05. Walter Assey sits right in front of me on Saturday mornings as we dive deep into your home renovation issues. Walter Assey, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. You got into the station fine because the Tour de Lille is tomorrow, but they're already starting to set up. You didn't hit any...
You know, I anywhere I go now, even when I go to the Dépanneur, I put Waze on.
You put Waze.
I don't trust the roads here. I don't trust the construction.
And you know a thing or two about construction.
I do.
Maybe one day you'll explain to me why I can see 7,000 orange cones on the street and seemingly nothing gets done.
Because we live in Quebec.
Ah, is that a topic for another day or another show? We are going to get into your questions. 514-800 is the text line. 514-790-0800 is the line to call if you have questions for Walter. We do want to talk about kitchen renovations because it is the season to start thinking about the kitchen renovations and the cost. But first, we have Tony. Jimmy, we have Tony on the line, I think, from Brossard. Tony, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Thanks for taking my call.
Our pleasure. What is the problem with your bathroom?
Yeah, so it's with my bathroom exhaust fan. It's not a typical bathroom fan. It's one of these inline duct fans that was installed following a renovation done by the previous owner of the house. There was no fan installed when the house was built. An electrician came to look when we noticed a burning smell, and he didn't like the fact that this fan was buried under insulation in the attic with no box around it and so subject to a lot of heat. We're guessing that the owner installed this type of fan because the distance from the intake in the bathroom and the exterior vent on the side of the house was around 11 feet. So to replace this fan, should we choose another similar model of inline duct fan and find some better way to protect it? Or could a regular bathroom fan work adequately at this distance of around 11 feet?
Walter, just before you answer that, anytime there's a burning smell, I'm guessing, call someone.
I mean, there's something there to overheating. The fan itself, it's clogged, and the motor itself is overheating because it's not, you know, it's the actual intake is clogged. So that could create burning smell. Now, 11 feet, to be quite frank with you, is not that bad. So you could essentially go with a standard fan.
Okay.
The only thing you want to look for is the CFM. You want to go with a good quality fan that is able to suck enough of the condensation out of the bathroom and exhaust it to the outside. So an insulated duct to the outside, whether you want to do it through the roof itself or whether you want to do it through the side of the house, there is different pointers I would give you on that, depending on the closest, if you want the closest point to get the fan out. Were you planning to put it on the side of the house or through the roof?
Well, it's already set up through the side of the house.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so through the side of the house, that means it's right next to a soffit, right? Like a couple of feet above it, there's a soffit?
Well, so actually it used to be through a soffit, but then when we had extra insulation added, the people who added the insulation suggested it shouldn't go out through the soffit, and they put it through a side of the house where it's just kind of flat. Like there used to be a gable vent there,
okay,
which is blocked off and all that. So it's just going straight through the side of the house, not near any soffits or anything.
And the soffits are way higher than it or
yes,
they're close? Okay, that's good.
Yeah, no,
okay,
they're way
higher. Okay, so then you don't have to worry about it. As far as installation is concerned, just make sure that when you install it, it's slanted towards the vent, not and there's no banana effect in the pipe itself. If you go with a like Panasonic, they do great fans, they do quiet fans, sometimes too quiet, to be quite frank with you. That's why we very much suggest that you install a timer on them,
right?
Because in a lot of cases, they're so quiet you don't hear them, so you put them on and they stay on forever, and then you burn the fan. So if you are going to go that route, do install a timer. I would definitely recommend you that you go with a regular fan.
Okay,
and that's it. This is not really you don't need to overcomplicate it. 11 feet is acceptable standards, provided that you don't put the cheap ones, of course.
Okay, so the electrician said he had never seen in like a residential setup this type of inline duct fan put there. So we weren't sure if there was some other reason why that might have been the case.
I have not seen it either. I have not seen it. I've seen it in commercial setups for sure, but not in residential ones. I can't really tell you the reason. But I could tell you that you're probably going to get a lot better results doing it the conventional way than the way you have it right now.
Okay. And just with regards to the ducting that's kind of coming out, right now it's an uninsulated, flexible aluminum ducting. The people who added our insulation said that because the duct is actually buried under insulation, we didn't necessarily need the blue insulated kind of flexible pipe. Is that the case?
That's not true. So, oh. I mean, and I'll tell you why. I mean, okay, it's not true. It's not... In renovations, we have the code, and then we have la règle de l'art, okay? So the code is a minimum standard. So, yes, it does pass minimum standard, providing you have your R50 above it, right?
Right, yes.
But, you know, in all fairness, insulation does move. People walk in the attic. So... why take a chance? I mean, in non-insulated pipe that gets exposed to condensation through the attic or cold and hot variants will create for you water damage. It will create issues that you don't need. So, yes, now you have great insulation because you just did it. But don't forget, if you have unblocked soffit, there is air that goes through the attic. Air does... move your insulation around, and that's why more often than not we see people that have adequate insulation in a lot of attics, but they have it piled up in a corner somewhere rather, and then they have nothing almost on the other side. It's because, you know, the wind blows, people walk there, they do electricity, they do this, they do that, and very seldom you'll see a homeowner going to his attic you know, with a rake and then fixing all his on yearly basis. We usually do it once every few years or when we see that there's a problem. So I would really recommend against it. I would tell you go with an insulated pipe. It's way better, and then you do it once and you do it right. And, you know, and it's not a biggie because what you do is you're going to go into that one area, you're going to remove the insulation from there, put it on the side, change the pipe and put it back. So it's not really as intrusive as you think.
Okay. And when they added that pipe, they actually did like a twist in it and put it before it went out. They said that it was something to do to prevent kind of air coming back through. Is that a normal thing to do?
I don't know what you mean by a twist, but I mean...
like in the flexible pipe, like when they had laid it out, they actually like just kind of made a loop in it, in the pipe. And then when they continued, just in the middle of it, as it was kind of laid out.
The pipe that you're talking about, is what size, just out of curiosity?
I'm not 100% sure. I'm not sure.
Okay. I mean... usually when you like if you're going to do a flap, if you're going to do a flap, it doesn't, I mean, that's what it's there for, is to prevent the air from coming back in. So with a conventional fan, you want to go with a straight pipe with no loops whatsoever. That's the best way out. And that's why I tell you, you put it on an incline. So if you do have something that backs up, it actually, you know, is slanted more towards the outside.
Tony, does that help you out?
Yep, that's great. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you so much to Tony for calling in. 514-790-0800. Your questions, your concerns for Walter Assey, or 514-800 is the text line. It's 9:15 right now.
You might just need to tighten the thingamajig on the whatchamacallit. This is the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
It is 9:21 on Saturday, June the 1st. Happy month, everyone. Happy June. Happy Pride. Happy Saturday. Currently 18 degrees in downtown Montreal. We're looking at a high of 26, a low of 15. Walter Assey, president of Renovco, joins us as usual here on this Saturday morning. Assey answers your questions and your concerns over your renovation projects. 514-800 is the text line if you want to send in your questions. Remember to include your name so we know who we're talking to. 514-790-0800. 514-790-0800 is where you call if you want to speak to Walter. Now, Walter and I were discussing the big kitchen renos, right? We were talking about kitchen renovation season and the ginormous project that is a kitchen renovation. First question, is there a season where it can cost less potentially?
Like anything, it's supply and demand and accessibility to good guys or good ebonists, good cabinetry makers as well. So in the winter, for sure, you'll have better accessibility because usually they're a tad less busy, but not by much. So, I mean, there is also the inconvenience, if you wish, of doing a renovation of a kitchen in the winter because of the fact that you can't barbecue. You can't, you know, cook outside or be outside, right, or have you. So it's a bit more intrusive to your life and everything else. But what's more important about a kitchen reno is everything that have to do with the planning. We find a lot of mistakes due to planning when we visit people that have regrets about their kitchen renos. Because they decided to undertake a lot of it themselves, or they didn't hire professionals to do it, or they didn't have, you know, designers and what have you. So one of the main, if you want, the common mistake that we find is anything that should be thought about before the actual cabinets come in.
Right, all the background work. We're going to keep talking about this in just a bit, but the phones are ringing off the hook. We're talking about kitchen plannings right there.
Walter's... Can't even talk about anything, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, no. Listen, it's just because I can see the numbers coming up. Yeah. So again, the best advice there is to plan ahead. Okay, let's get to Dora from Shadowgate. Dora, how are you?
Hi, good morning, and thank you so much for taking the call. I'm so glad I got through. And as you're talking about kitchen renos, I'm in the process of changing the floors myself. Ooh. I think I'm insane. It is the biggest job I've ever done. I'm not a professional. The fact that it's actually laid to the floor and stuck is a miracle. So next time I'm hiring a professional, that's for sure. The question and the reason for my call is because I'm actually needing to replace my roof. And I'm going to be getting an Elastomer roof.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know the EMC, is it possible, and the white roof, in terms of the three, which one is the best, and is the price in the same realm?
So when it comes to elastomeric roofs, the white elastomeric is what is recommended. As a matter of fact, a lot of cities actually impose on you to have a white roof. And it's actually better for you as far as longevity is concerned, because your biggest enemy in a roof usually is the sun. So whenever you have a white roof, all that heat from the sun actually gets reflected. So it gives a lot more, it's way less abusive on the roof itself. The trick with elastomeric membranes is you want to make sure that the roofer have done a lot of it, because it is what we call a heat application. It's done through welding. So there, if someone does not know what they're doing, they might cause a fire while torching down the membrane. So you want to make sure that they have adequate insurance. And not because that they have regular insurance, that means they have also heat application insurance. It's a special provision in the policy. So that's what you want to make sure about. But if you go with an elastomeric, your best bet really is to go with the white membrane.
Is the price the same, whether it's white or
it is
dark?
A tad more expensive. It is a tad more expensive, but it's worth it.
Okay.
So usually there's, depending on of course, the roofer, but as far as materials are concerned, it's about a 15% difference. So it's not as far as the application, it's the same. So technically, the guy should not add more labor to it. It's really the material that makes a difference. And the material is only 30% of usually what they would charge you to do the work. So technically speaking, it shouldn't be more than a few hundred to, you know, maybe $1,000 difference, which, you know, what it will give you in the longevity and the look as well. Because a lot of these colors are not nice. You know, they have that greenish gray one that I don't like personally, or the gray one per se. So from a curb appeal look and from a longevity look, I will definitely go with a white membrane.
Thank you very much. Thank you very, very much. Have a good day.
All right. Thank you for that, Dora. We'll get to Joanne's call in just a bit. I do want to take a question here from our text line 514-800. We were talking about kitchen renos. What should people expect to pay? The price range? I mean, sometimes it can go crazy amount of money, right?
So, I mean, the good thing with kitchen renos is, provided you have an honest contractor, you can have the good, you can have the bad, and you can have the ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And you can control the budget as long as you know what you're paying for your money, what you're getting for you, what you're paying, I should say.
Ahead of time. And does anyone actually stick to the budget?
Well, I mean, if good planning will allow you to stick to the budget, and that's what we were kind of touching on. I see a lot of the cost overrun that people will have is because there's a lot of oversights. And sometimes contractor will do it on purpose and not mention it because, you know, during the demolition is the best time to mention it. Other times.
Of course, when it's all apart. Yeah.
That's all apart and you have no choice but to say yay. Now, that's why it's important that you speak about a lot of things beforehand. I'll give you an example, okay? When you install your cabinets, you install the countertop. It's usually, you know, quartz or granite because that's what's really the Decton, or this is what's the most popular right now. Like 95% of what we install is that. It's really complicated to remove that, and there's a risk of breakage in case you need to repair something behind it. So more often than not, the kitchen cabinets are on exterior walls.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the houses are in the 60s, built in the 60s, 70s, and what have you. And a lot of contractors that are specialized would not even mention the insulation in that wall. You're not a professional, so you're not going to think about it. So, you know, you're going to install your cabinets, and then you're going to realize you have mold on your
wall.
And
how much does something like that kind
of... If you look at the whole job per se, that will be a fractional cost, really. Because, you know, this is not the most expensive. But for me, it's the most important. The electrical, anything that is infrastructure. You know, as far as mechanicals, plumbing, electrical, things that you say, okay, I'm putting these cabinets and I want them there forever. So I don't want to ever have to visit that wall in my life again.
Yeah.
So you ensure that you're protecting your investment. That's really one big portion that is overlooked by a lot of homeowners or whoever they hire to do the work.
I'm trying to get something out of you, Walter. What's the craziest cost you've had for the package?
I mean, look, it can go literally in the hundreds of thousands and can go as low as 30,000-40,000, right? It depends everything that comes around it as
right.
well. Are you doing the floor? Are you doing the lighting? Are you doing the countertop? Are you doing the backsplash?
So it can be up to a couple hundred if you're...
Oh, it can even go... I've seen cases where it went actually above that. But,
wow.
But again... in every quality that is available out there, there are different qualities within the
specs. There's a range. We have Joanne waiting on the line. We'll get to her in just a bit. Joanne, stay on the line, but it is 9:30 right now, which means it is time for your CTV News update.
You're listening to the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
9:35, 18 degrees in Montreal right now. Walter Assey is joining us this morning, of course, as he fields your questions, your concerns, anything to do with home renovation. Joanne from Chomedey has been waiting very patiently. Joanne, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question concerning our deck. We redid our deck last year, and yesterday we washed it down with the what do you call it? The shop, not a shop vac, but the power...
pressure washer, yeah.
Yes, thank you. And some people are saying to us, no, you don't have to put a protector, but I feel that we should. So I just want to know what we should be doing.
So this is a wood deck, right?
Yes.
And some people are telling you you don't have to put a protector?
Yes, they said just wash it down and just leave it. It'll be fine. And yesterday we actually washed it down also with the Thompson deck cleaner.
Yeah.
And we washed it down. But now I'm wondering, what do I do? Do I put a protector? Do I not put a protector? Everybody's saying, well, it looks good. You don't have to.
Okay. So, I mean, the people that are telling you that, are these people that like you or...
Walter.
So I mean, here's the thing. Wood always needs to be protected.
Okay.
I'm saying always. Like, there's no exceptions. Especially when it looks good. I mean, that's a more of a reason for you to protect it. Because okay. If not, with time, it will rot. And mm-hmm. Especially when you have cracks developing in the wood and all the water goes through that. And then you have the ice and expands and contracts and, you know, there's nothing good that's going to come out of that. I'm going to give you a couple of tricks. Now that you washed it,
yeah.
Okay, which is good, you removed all of that grime. Mm-hmm. What you do is you want to do a light sanding.
Okay.
Okay, in case the color, have it ever been protected or is this the new deck? Or
it's a new deck. We did it last July.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the there is a misconception. It's in treated wood, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. On the old times, treated wood would have, we always were told you have to wait a whole year before you protect it. Matter of fact, the new way of treated wood is you should not wait more than 90 days to protect it.
Okay.
So you kind of pass that limit. But you're still good. You still didn't wait years like everybody is telling you to do. So now what you want to do, you could do, now that you did the clean, you could do a light sanding just to open up the pores of the wood.
Okay.
And if you don't want to fight with your deck every year, you could put a sealer that is just a clear sealer. Or it could be even a tint sealer, but use oil-based one and not opaque ones.
Oh, oil-based, okay.
Yeah, because with oil-based, you can reapply. You have to reapply them more often, but you don't have to sand every time.
Oh, I see, okay.
Whereas if you go with an opaque-type sealer, then you're going to have the paint that's going to start with time coming out, and you have to sand every time. It's a bit more of a process, and it requires more maintenance.
So if I were to go with a water-based clear, you recommend the oil-based as opposed to the water-based?
Well, I mean, even if you're going with clear in general,
right?
Okay, its reapplication is acceptable. When you go with opaque, it's not. So it becomes more of a maintenance issue. Now, you know, in the oil world, if you wish, you have products that will last longer as far as protection is concerned. But there's only one hick with that, is that we recommend, or it is recommended by most manufacturers, that you reapply once a year.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with the opaque, you don't necessarily need to do that. So there is a give and take situation. Yeah, that's pretty much as far as wood is concerned. But whoever tells you not to protect the wood, I mean, they're really not looking after your interest with that.
Could you recommend a product that we... Because I remember last summer, you recommended one, I think it was from Home Depot or
no,
Rona 9.
That is incorrect. That is incorrect. Oh. What I recommended is Bear have a good... deck cleaner. So whatever.
Oh, it's the cleaner. Okay.
Yeah, you use the Thompson.
The cleaner. Okay.
But
okay.
I would tell you, and you read in between the lines, I did not recommend the Home Depot paint.
Okay.
I recommended the cleaner.
The cleaner. It was the cleaner. It was something 95, yeah. I think.
That's
I remember
correct.
The 95.
Benjamin Moore have a few good options.
Okay.
And they have good consultants. So when you go see them, they can give you different options. And if you want to add a tint or a color, you could actually have, they have different stain colors that you can add. If you like the look of it and you just want to keep it clear, that will be probably the easiest way for you. That's also an option. When you go with the clear, the color does not fade, so you don't feel that you need to, you know, go a bit more intrusively every couple of years. So if you like the color, clear would be the easiest to maintain.
But could I have them add just a tint?
100%. Yes. 100%. Okay. You can look. I mean, don't shy away from the stain, because again, if you go with a stain, I always say for maintenance purposes, go with a stain rather than a paint color. Just simply, it's easier for the maintenance. But you know, there's nothing wrong with going with an opaque color either. You just have to understand that with time you need to maintain. But
we're thinking clear, but I just wanted a little bit. Excuse me, of a tint.
Yeah, and that's why I would tell you, like, Benjamin Moore would probably be able to serve you better, because, I mean, that's what they do, right? It's and they have good products in general. Another product that is good for outside wood is Cabot, C-A-B-O-T. It's a bit less known, but it is a good product as well.
Okay. I hope that helps you out, Joanne.
Yes, thank you very much. Have a good day, both of you.
All right, happy Saturday to you. Okay, we got a text message here, Walter, about this question about the deck. Someone, Sonia, is writing, regarding the wood deck, is the same approach for a cedar wood deck? Are we using the same thing if it's cedar?
100%. 100%. Any type of wood, you treat it almost the same way as far as protection is concerned. With the cedar decks in general, are, you know, the preparation might be a bit harder because it's a harder wood, but everything else remains the same. The product is the same. The way you want to protect is the same. The maintenance of it is the same as well.
And how much should all of this cost you? Do we have an idea?
You know, I mean, if you have time on your hand, you're way better off doing it yourself. You know, just kind of follow the adequate stuff, because it is labor intensive to do it right, especially if you have to do the light sanding and the cleaning. The cleaning you do, you have to wait a few days for it to dry. You have to wait for a certain specific time of weather, and the temperature have to be right. It cannot be too hot. The time of day.
Are
have
you
to
cooking
be right.
or what are we
well,
doing?
Well, that's pretty much what it is, right? So you don't want to overcook the wood and overheat the wood, and then doesn't, you know. So that's why a lot of this can be done. This is like if you're gonna do a DIY, that would be one place I would tell you DIY.
You can do it, but you got to take it slow. 514-790-0800 is where you call us. 514-800 is the text line. We had a text coming in not too long ago about planning. When you were talking about the kitchen renovations, that you somebody is agreeing with you saying, you need to do it right. You need to plan ahead. We're going to get to Amanda on the phone in just a tiny bit, but we're nearing 9:45.
This is the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Welcome back. It's 9:49 on this beautiful start to your Saturday morning, 18 degrees, June 1st, the start of a new month. Many of you are thinking about getting those renovation projects going. 514-790-0800 is the number to call, or 514-800 is the text line for your questions. Remember to include your name. Walter Assey is here to answer your questions. And we have Amanda on the line from Brassard. Good morning, Amanda.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
No problem. It's our pleasure. You have a question about an addition to your house, which immediately makes me think, wow, a lot of money.
It's a teeny tiny addition.
Oh, okay.
So we have this bungalow and we use the side door to enter the house. And it's just like kind of a little deck situation. And my husband and I have been debating. He's like, if we want to close it down four seasons, it's going to cost way more money than if we just shut it down three seasons. And I wanted kind of to get your input on that, because I would just like just a little teeny tiny entry so that we can take our shoes off. And I just want to have it nice and isolated. Does that make, like, how, what's the budget that I should be looking for if it's like a, I don't know, something like an 8x8 little addition?
Okay. So to confuse you a bit more, the issue with additions is everything that goes around it, more the different traits than the actual size of it. So the size does matter. but to a certain extent.
Okay.
Okay, so I mean, example. One of the things we need is a foundation, right? So whether you do an 8x8 or an 8x12 foundation, the cost difference is not really as big. But you still need the excavator, you still need the concrete, you still need the forms, and so on and so forth, right?
That makes sense.
When it comes to three season versus four season, I tend to agree with you a bit more in the sense that a four season for resale is going to make a lot more sense. Okay, if you're creating this type mudroom that is three season and minus 40, does not really make sense. But at the same token, it can also determine the type of foundation we do. So a three season can accept a sonotube foundation, which is a lot cheaper than a full foundation. And to confuse you a bit more, a lot of these decisions sometimes cannot come from you. They come from the city. So in a lot of cases, a lot of cities do not allow sonotube foundations. So and if they are forcing you to do a full foundation for your extension, then it would not make sense for you to do it three season at all, because your biggest cost factor will be your full foundation in this case. And to go with three season just is, you know, all what you're really saving is to putting 2x4s instead of 2x6s no insulation. But I mean, everything else remains really the same if you think about it.
Okay.
So and again, that's as far as material is concerned, is not that there's not much difference there. Now, one of the aspects, because you're undertaking this, you'll be surprised. But even for a small extension, the cost is gonna be higher than you would like. So if you can think of ways to make it a bit bigger and have other use to that room, okay, that might also make sense for you if you're undertaking this, because you will see that the difference between the two is not that great, and you can have a lot more in the resale as far as, you know, building it and what have you. To be quite frank with you, Amanda, a small extension, when you say really small, it's not a great investment.
Okay.
So, I mean, the amount of money you pay for it versus what you get out of it is not that great. Again, because, you know, you need the framers, you need the roof trusses, you need the excavators, you need the cement, you need the exterior cladding, the windows, the doors, and everything else. So you look at it and you say, my God, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But it have all these specialized traits that go with it as well.
Okay. Thank you. And can you just re-mention what that other foundation? So there's the normal.
So you have, I mean, three different types of foundations you can do. You can do a sonotube foundation.
Okay.
You could do a technopure foundation. And then you could do a full concrete foundation. Right?
Okay.
The more expensive of these would be your full foundation. And like I said, the first thing you want to do, Amanda, when you're doing these types of jobs, is you want to go and have a chat with the city. Because there's a lot of things that, there's a lot of moving parts. And I'll give you an example. If your house is made out of brick.
It is, actually.
There you go. So 9 out of 10 times, the city won't allow you to go with any type of siding for these types of extensions, except if it's brick.
Okay.
So right off the bat, that brick layer is not going to be nice to you. Small, big or small, it's going to cost you what's going to cost you. They have, you know, in their head, their season is short, and, you know, they have certain standards that, you know, or certain amount that they have to charge by season. So you will see that the cost difference there will be good. It will be big. So that's why I would go with the city first. See if they allow sonotube. See if they allow you an Excel siding, a Maybach siding, or some type of more affordable exterior cladding than brick. Because again, to go with an 8x8 and to go a brick, you're going to see it's cost prohibitive as well.
Okay. I did good by calling you because I didn't even factor in the city. So thank you.
Always do good by calling me, Amanda.
And remember, if you don't think about the city, they will think about you. So
oh my God, yeah.
They'll send someone over, Amanda. Okay,
big
hope that helps.
Big Brother is always watching.
Oh boy, we're going there. Thank you, Amanda. Thank have you. A good Saturday. We just have a couple minutes here, Walter, but you wanted to give us a quick checklist about, because we're getting more comments here on kitchen renos and prepping. So if you can do a quick checklist before the renovation starts.
So, I mean, look, I can give you examples of common mistakes because that will kind of, it's a long subject and I would like to touch on it multiple times because it's one of the biggest, if not the biggest investment you'll do in your home. And more often than not, we see it, it's that it's not done right, unfortunately. So I mean, in certain cases where the electrical is not addressed, the codes have changed when it comes to kitchens drastically, especially in the electrical side. Like you need to have different circuit for the plugs. More often than not, in the older homes, that's not the case. You need to have a GFI plug if you're next to a sink. That is, you know, most often than not, we go there and that's not done. Now, this is a big deal. Why? Because if you have a GFI, you need to go straight from the panel and fish the wire right to the kitchen. So if you have a brand new kitchen in that area, you're in a whole world of trouble to get the wire there. And, you know, the costs are going to just snowball. Insulation is another thing. Design and planning, color coordination. You have no idea how many times we see that the color coordination, the mood boards were not done adequately. You know, take a gray color. One tone in gray can go cold, stone cold, blue-gray. That is terrible. You know, and a bit more concentration or saturation in the color will give you what you need. The grout color of the backsplash. So the flooring and everything else, the insulation. So it adds on. A good kitchen planner, a good kitchen contractor is a contractor that does most of the work or if not all of the work and can be able to
help you out. Walter, it's like the Oscars, we're playing you out, but I know the music is playing out, but you will.
I want to thank the producers. And
I want to thank everyone. No, but thank you to Don and thank you to Jimmy and thank you to you, Walter. He'll be back next Saturday, of course, to answer all of your renovation questions. I'm back early tomorrow morning on weekends with Joanne Vrakas with the latest on the Tour de Lille. Remember, the roads are going to be closed all over the place. That's it for now. Happy Saturday. Enjoy the day. It's time for your CTV News Update.